Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
And I'm Ben. As always, we are joined by our super producer, Noel Brown. His nickname for this podcast, I want to pitch this to you, Scott, should be N.
N.
Just that, just the letter N.
Oh, the letter N. I thought you were saying I-N, like N. Oh, okay. I'm going to say, how about this? I'm going to propose this one. Creed.
Ah, okay.
Creed.
I'll play your reindeer games.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
That's what this makes me think of every time I hear it anyway. As would any good Rocky fan, right?
Right, absolutely.
All right, so today we're talking about the Gumpert Apollo, and you can't help but think of Apollo Creed, of course.
Uh-huh.
So did I really need to put that together for the listener? I don't think I did. I think everybody knew probably.
I would like to think so. Did you see Creed?
No, I haven't seen the new one. No.
I haven't seen the new one either. I hear good things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a fan of the original Rocky series, though.
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding?
It had to be. Watched on those giant laser discs. You know, the ones that were size of, like, a big records?
Yeah.
Yeah. At a friend's house, he had one of those. Now, I think he had, like, two movies. He had that. He had, like, I think it was, like, Rocky II and, and Apocalypse Now. His dad had that, and we watched that. Which probably shouldn't have been watching at that age, but we were.
Oh, Apocalypse Now is one of my favorite films.
Yeah. Yeah, we watched it many times because that was one of the very few giant laser disc that, you know, it took two of us to load the thing in practically.
Yeah.
So
I had,
so big.
But before we get to the actual show, I had a one laser disc experience, and it was, the school I was at had, you know, put some government money into new modern technology.
Oh, that was wise expenditure.
Like a laser disc player. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had, I think our school had maybe they had a one laser disc player and they had six laser discs. And one of them, for some reason, the other five were educational. The other one was, People Under the Stairs, the horror movie.
No way.
Yes way.
Really?
Yeah.
Sounds like a teacher brought that in and just left it by accident.
I think that's what it had to be. Cause surely there's no way that a school would approve buying a horror movie.
So that's what they're doing in the faculty lounge all day.
They're just watching People Under the Stairs on repeat.
Scary movies, yeah.
Oh, if you met my teachers. But Rocky is a super series of films. Apocalypse Now is a masterpiece. It's a super series of films. This is the best way I can segue into today's topic, the Gumpert Apollo, which is, of course, a supercar.
Of course. Yeah, it's a German supercar, mm-hmm. and that's what makes it a little bit different. Now, we'll get into the whole story of it and, you know, even some really up-to-date information about this company. So, I first want to mention that this is a listener suggestion.
It comes
from a listener named Aaron S., and Aaron has been corresponding with us for several years now, mm-hmm. I think. And Aaron wrote in, as part of our Nuts and Bolts episode last time, I guess it was, you know, something that he had written in last year, really.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
June of 2015. But remember, there was like a year gap when we didn't do it, Nuts and Bolts.
That's true.
So there was a lot of built-up email.
And thank you to all the patient listeners. You guys are the best. We get to things eventually.
Eventually, yeah. It's not quite as bad as our International Harvester case where it was, what, 3 years? but this one is almost a year old, maybe. Mm-hmm. He wrote in June of 2015 and mentioned that the Gumpert Apollo is a supercar that not many people know of, but an amazing car all around. And we happen to agree, Aaron, because that is today's topic. And digging into it, it certainly is. I mean, this is a car that, Ben, it kind of took me by surprise. It right when I first started working here at How Stuff Works and, you know, really focusing on, you know, automotive news, I guess, you know, like what's happening at the Nürburgring and, you know, just really, I guess, focusing on what's happening in motorsport. This one took me by surprise. I'd never heard of the Gumpert Apollo until I started working here. There was no news ahead of time that I had picked up on because there was a record lap time set in 2007, but that's not the beginning of the company.
No. The beginning of the company dates back to 2004, so it's still a relatively new kid on the block.
Yeah, the idea was in the founder's head, I guess, from about 2000 on, because the thought was that he was going to create what would be Germany's answer to, like, the Italian hypercar manufacturers, like, you know, Ferrari and Lamborghini and Pagani, you know, those high-profile manufacturers of what you call supercars now. They call them hypercars. We have a different term for hypercars around here, but supercars. We'll stick with that for today.
We'll just stick with that.
This is like Germany's version of that, a very low-volume manufacturer. They never were intended to produce a lot. I mean, I think they had the initial goal in 2004 or 5 of producing about 30 cars a year.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
Very small amount. Now, the tech specs of this stuff are pretty impressive as well. Just the original, the first model, like a scale model, 1-4 scale model, they made all the way back in 2002.
Yeah, so they were
before the company even existed.
Yeah, that was like for wind tunnel testing and stuff, right?
Right.
So they worked on a couple little models before they even built a prototype, which I think that's pretty much standard procedure, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially if you consider, I'm not going to go super cheap yet, but especially when you consider the price of this kind of vehicle.
Well, sure. I mean, I think that, you know, even working on a small scale like that, you know, a quarter scale model, it's still got to be very, very expensive.
Oh, absolutely. It's only comparatively inexpensive. Where do you want to go with this? Because we have a lot of stuff to talk about.
All right.
Here.
Well, let's see. How about let's stick with the founding of the company first. We'll get into some of the specs later on as we get towards the more modern stuff. But, yeah, so it was founded in 2004, and, you know, we mentioned 30 cars were planned to be built each year. The first cars weren't built until about 2005, and that's after they made a couple of prototypes, I believe, just right ahead of that, right?
Right, yeah. They made two prototype Apollos first, and then they started production in October of 2005.
Okay, that's good. And, Ben, I should point out here that these were only sold to European, Middle Eastern, and U.S. markets, so it's not everywhere, and I'm kind of surprised to see the U.S. market on there. Typically, we're kind of shut out of things like this, right?
Yeah, we're often the last in line.
That's true. It seems like it, but thankfully it's here. And you know what? One quick little side note on before we move on here with the company history.
Mm-hmm.
I have yet to see one of these things on the road, in a museum, anywhere outside of, online.
Yeah, I have not seen one in real life yet either.
No, and you think with, the amount of car shows that we go to and the area that we live in, and, people wanted to do something just a little bit different, have something unique, strange.
Yeah.
Because we see some really strange cars here, like one-offs and spiker cars and things that people...
Fiskers, which you almost never see.
Yeah, I mean, I compare it to almost to like, down in Miami or something where if you're not driving the latest supercar, you're out of style. That's what it seems like.
Right.
I mean, at times around here. And all the shows we go to that are specifically focused on exotics, you would think that we would see... a Gumpert at some point, but we just haven't yet. I don't know what the reasoning behind that is. I mean, maybe there's only like two or three in the United States total. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure of the, I was trying to find the manufacturing numbers or the sales numbers rather for the U.S. And this is a car that you would see in Los Angeles or Miami.
Yeah.
We do have, the good fortune to live in a town with a bunch of car enthusiasts and gearheads and people who do buy the latest models.
And have a lot of money.
Right. There are a lot of celebrities who live here, athletes, et cetera.
Yeah.
But
recording artists.
Recording artists. But for some reason, man, this is maybe the subject of something else. For some reason, the only thing people seem to want to buy for the past few months have been those Polaris Sidekicks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's true.
They were nowhere. Now they're everywhere.
They really are. I see them in parking lots. And, I used to think, oh, my God, I'm gonna turn around and go take a photo of that. Now I don't even turn around anymore to take the photo because I've posted a couple of them on our Facebook page, personal sightings or whatever around town. But to be honest, I mean, we're getting a little bit jaded, Ben, because we see so many of those things around. It's fun to see them. And I got to be honest, I rarely see them driving. I see them parked mostly. That's where I see them.
I've seen them driving, and I don't know if I told you, I saw one at a drive-through.
A drive-through? That's, I don't know why that's strange to me, but it is. Let me ask you this. Was the owner wearing a helmet?
The owner was wearing a helmet.
Okay.
It did match the Sidekick, like it had the same, paint specs. And, I think the weirdest, I hope this doesn't sound bad, ladies and gentlemen, but you know how fads are, and we've done some stuff on the Polaris, and it's a cool vehicle.
Oh, I'd love to have one.
Yeah, I'd love to. It's not a daily driver by any means.
Oh, no.
But it seems like it's a lot of fun to drive from what we looked at. I saw somebody pick up their kid like a middle school or something in one, and it hit me. I was like, oh, these aren't cool anymore.
Really?
Because
of that one thing, that one.
I don't know why. That must have been like the tipping point.
Oh, man.
Because a lot of people liked them because they were new and unique and exclusive, but you lose exclusivity when a lot of people have them. I'm purely talking about public perception. I'm not talking about the specs in any way.
So it's like yesterday's minivan to you now. Is that right? Maybe not that far. Maybe it hasn't slid down that far.
No, nothing like that. Let's say it's just a little more commonplace. And the Gumpert is, you know, I don't think the Gumpert's ever going to get that common.
Well, I hope not. I mean, I wouldn't think it can. I don't even know if it can, but I guess it depends on where they go in the future, Ben, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's jump back into, you know, what's going on with this vehicle, maybe. And
we should probably start at the beginning by talking about the first cars.
Yeah, the first cars. And the founder, I don't know if we've mentioned this, he was part of the Audi VW group.
Oh, yeah, Roland Gumpert.
Yeah, he had come back from I think it was China.
Yeah, around the end of 2001.
With the idea to do all this. So that's how that all kind of was spawned, you know, the idea. And, the cars that they started producing, just incredible. I mean, it's everything you expect out of a supercar, of course. I mean, mm-hmm. long, low, wide, you know, gullwing doors.
Mean engine.
Yeah, twin turbo. We can talk about the engine in just a minute, but, you know, so, carbon fiber body panels and fiberglass. I think that was optional. I think fiberglass was the standard, I believe, on the first ones. Had a tubular frame. Mm-hmm. Of course, it was two seats, mid-engine, rear-wheel drive. Just an incredible vehicle. It's relatively lightweight. It's about 2,600 pounds, I think, depending on your options. Essentially, it's a street-legal race car, really.
Uh-huh.
Sort of. I mean, there's one later that's it's a little closer to that, but an amazing vehicle. And they said that, you know, I love how they put this. When they're talking about the design of the thing,
mm-hmm.
They do the thing that F1 and IndyCar always says, where, you know, theoretically this car could drive upside down if it were to,
right.
if it were to be able to do that. And, you know, of course they've never tested that. You know, that's something you don't really test, but that's just based on the amount of downforce that this car produces. And in fact, I think they make a claim that this is the streetcar with the most downforce of any car out there. This is it's one. So I guess it's emphasis on handling, you know, mm-hmm. and of course you'd be able to get up to speed pretty quick with that engine too. So
let's talk
about the engine. It's an Audi sourced mm-hmm. V8 engine, but they've tuned it up quite a bit.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Twin turbo.
Mm-hmm.
Intercoolers.
it's a fantastic engine. So it's 4,163 cc bi-turbo intercooled, as Scott said, Audi V8. And do you want to talk a little bit about my favorite parts? Let's talk about speed.
Okay, you said it's a 4163 cc engine, so that's like a 4.1 liter engine. Mm-hmm. And the speed, tell me about the speed.
Okay.
Oh, you know what, let's not confuse this though, because there are three models and one of
those, good point.
One of them's called the Speed. So the base,
true,
the base vehicle happens to be called the Speed.
Mm-hmm.
So let's hear about speed.
So we're looking at 650 horsepower.
Not bad.
Not bad at all. In this day and age, it's not, in this day and age, it's not bad still. It's a European company, so they do, their 0 to 100 is in kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be about 62 miles per hour. Their 0 to 60, 3.1 seconds.
3.1, not bad. That's right along the lines of, the McLarens, I think. They were around 2.9, something like that. You know, even right now, and this was, we're talking back in 2005.
Yeah.
2005, 2007, somewhere around there. So a real performer. So that was the base Speed version. They call it the Speed.
Oh, wait, yeah. Top speed of the Speed is 223.9 miles per hour.
Whoa. Now, that's something that they have kept relatively consistent all the way through the company. I mean, from beginning to end. They had three versions initially. They had the base Speed version, which we just told you about. They had the Sport version, which upped it to about 690 horsepower. And then they had a race version, which was 789 horsepower. And they also, they raced in that one. I'll tell you about that in just a moment. But they also had a hybrid version that they raced on the track as well. And the hybrid version had something like 512. It's a different engine configuration. I'll tell you about
that
too.
For sure.
512 horsepower out of a 3.3 liter V8 And then you combine that with 134 horsepower from an electric motor, you know, like an assist.
Mm-hmm.
So this, what is it, 646 total horsepower? But that allowed them to race in a different group, you know, that they wanted to compete in. So that hybrid version, of course, has its own place in history. Now,
and has its regenerative braking, which is pretty cool, too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now, that race version that I just mentioned, mm-hmm. I guess they call it the Apollo R, if you want to. Road and track, that's what they call it. And they said that, they claim that that one was reaching 860 horsepower. Now, that's probably a finely tuned version of the 789 horsepower engine that we talked about originally. And I think that still goes, I didn't have any engine specs for the R version. So I think that's still that 4.1 liter engine, the Audi V8 again.
So it was, for a time, faster than the Veyron. Faster than the Zonda.
Yeah, that's a thing. Like, and we found that out on Top Gear, right?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
So here's what happened. Around 2007, I think, is when they made their first run at the Nürburgring.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, we've talked about this so many times on our show. In fact, we have a full episode, I think, on the Nürburgring, don't we?
Yeah, which is still, you know, I had to go back to that for just to double check on some stuff before we went on the air with this.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say this often, Scott, but that episode holds up. If
really?
You want to learn about the Nürburgring, yeah, we go through the history of it all the way to, you know, present day as we were recording it. And there's some news about the Nürburgring that has happened since we recorded that. But yeah, that was a pretty good one. I stand
by it. Some of the top contenders might have moved around a little bit of shuffling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that you can still go to a site. In fact, I went to the site earlier to see kind of where the Gumpert stands in the top 100 lap times. Because, you know, back in 2007, they made a run, and I don't know, you know, they keep the year there when the run was made. I don't know where it was, if it was the top speed at the time or not.
Uh-huh.
It might have been. But the Gumpert Apollo Sport had a lap time of 7 minutes, 24 seconds in 2007. And that's when a lot of people had just first heard of this vehicle. I mean, mm-hmm. 2 years after the inception of the whole program and, or the company rather. And today, that stands as number 16 out of the, you know, top 100. And that's still not bad, right?
Not
I mean,
bad.
It's held
still
up for
top 20.
Quite a while. That's, 9 years ago now at this
mm-hmm.
point. All right, so going up to, or I guess bumping up to 2009, they made another incredible run, which holds them at the number 6 position as of today.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Gumpert Apollo Speed. And so the Speed, is that that's the base one, right?
That's the base one.
Well, okay, so the Apollo Speed actually holds the number 6 position right now with a lap time of 7 minutes 11.57 seconds, which was made in 2009.
Wow.
So two spots out of the top 20 go to Gumpert.
Not bad at all.
That's really good. And you know, reading back, you know, with some of the it's kind of fun to go back and look at the articles from 2009 because a lot of people were like, where is this car coming from? What's the,
right.
you know, what is this all about? What's, you know, who's Gumpert? Why they name it this? you know, that was one thing that a lot of people said, like, why would they name their car Gumpert Apollo? It just sounds like a kind of frumpy name for a sports car. Isn't like a really sexy sports car like this. And, well, we know now that it comes from the founder's name.
Right. It comes from Roland Gumpert because,
yeah.
Let's be honest, it's not – just the way the name Gumpert sounds, it's not something you would associate with speed.
Yeah. Well, but you should, though, because, I mean, the racing, we didn't even mention the racing yet, but I guess we probably should here.
He proved that you can't judge something by its name.
That's true. Yes, right. And you know what? To him, it sounds like a great name, right? I mean, he's like why wouldn't you put your name on something like this? Right?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, wouldn't you drive the Benjamin Arrow or something?
Of course, we both would.
Well, yeah, but that's just me being a narcissist. It would actually be your last name. It would make sense.
I thought for sure you were going to say the Bolin something.
Oh, well, I don't know. Right. I don't know.
Okay.
We'll get to that
all
one
right.
in
well,
another episode.
Well, as far as racing goes, I mean, right at the very beginning, in April of 2005, the Apollo made its racing debut in something called the Divinal Cup.
Yeah, yeah, Divinal Cup, it's held in Germany. I think, in 2006 it was at Hockenheimring.
Ah, yes, yes, that's right, the Hockenheimring, I think.
Hockenheimring.
Yeah, it's a tough one, that's a long word. So yeah, I think that's right, and Ruben Mays was the driver. He finished third, on the track in that year. And in 2008 at the 24 Hours at Nürburgring, the car was driven by a couple of, ex-Formula One racers and, competed in the, I shouldn't have said this, I should have said this up front, it's the hybrid version.
Yes.
Yeah, so the hybrid version. Let's see. Where else are we going to go here? A Top Gear, maybe?
Yeah, let's do the Power Lap board.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's right, because that's where a lot of people also got a taste of what the Gumper could do, because you know how they have the Stig driver on the track and, you know, get the lap time, and they place it on the board. And I'm sure everybody's familiar with, you know, moving the magnets around and the where is it going to place, you know, as they move it up the board, and everybody kind of cheers as it gets higher and higher.
Yeah.
Well, the Apollo Sport had a lap time of 1 minute 17.1 seconds, and for a while, it was the fastest on the power lap board, but later it was beaten by the Bugatti Veyron Supersport and I think five other cars since then. So it slipped down, but for a while it was number one. And get this, it was faster. It was actually faster than at the time. So you might think like, well, what was on the board? Maybe it wasn't anything, you know, that it didn't really have anything to compete with, I guess. But at the time, the Bugatti Veyron was on the board, and so was the Pagani Zonda. So it did have some serious competition. Those are cars that place pretty high, and it did lap faster than those cars. So an impressive package, this whole thing. Really.
Yeah, but all of that leads us to an unpleasant situation, an unpleasant turn of events.
Sure.
So if it's, let's say it's 2011, 2012, the Gumbert is a critical success in terms of its performance, its handling, the reviews. People love this vehicle, but there are financial woes. And these culminate in 2013. Gumbert was in talks with an anonymous backer who was going to make a deal that could have saved the company. Mm-hmm. However, that unidentified investor backed out of the deal, and this forced Gumbert to go into bankruptcy, or as they call it, to go into administration in Europe.
Yeah, so they had to liquidate the company.
In 2013.
Yeah, yeah. And then there was a little bit of a gap here, right? I mean, I think as of, actually, I guess we should pick it up again with 2016, right?
Yeah.
Because in January of 2016, this company was then, the Gumbert Company, which we call, was it Gumbert?
I'll tackle it. This is Gumbert Sportwagen Manufacturer Altenburg GmbH.
Very good, Ben.
I don't know if that was good.
That's a long name for a company, right?
Dear German listeners, I apologize. Feel free to take a page from our Australian listeners' book and email a pronunciation guide to me. I will read it. I did print out the one from Australia.
It works and we try.
It works and we try.
We do
Melbourne.
Try. nice work, show off. I get it wrong every time. All right, so in 2016, this company that Ben just mentioned was purchased by a Chinese consortium with the name of Ideal Team Venture. That's the name of the company.
You got the easy one.
Well, yeah, but listen to this. I had no idea this was going on. As of April of 2015, that same company, Ideal Team Venture, had purchased the De Tomaso mark as well.
The Italian car manufacturer.
Yeah, so think of like the Pantera that we talk about sometimes on the show. That mark has been purchased by the same company, and of course, you know, this Gumbert, which they renamed the Gumbert Company. It's not Gumbert anymore.
Right.
Now it's just called Apollo Automobile, and with no E at the end, Automobile. This is actually really good news. I thought, well, okay, you know what happens in this case sometimes is they try to manufacture for a short while and nothing really happens. It fizzles out.
Or they change attempt to change that intangible part of the brand. You know, they'll buy a not Ideal Venture in specific, but, you know, it can happen, Scott. A company will buy one brand and then try to make it something it's not.
Oh, like the Chinese Hummers, maybe?
Hey, I wasn't going to say it, but you're absolutely spot on.
Well, that's one, right? There's many examples of that out there. And I don't mean to pick on, you know, the Hummers, I guess. All right. So this is good news, really, because right now, I mean, this week as we're talking, in fact, 2 days ago from when we were recording this, Apollo Automobile revealed a new vehicle, an incredible new vehicle, really.
Oh,
it's called the Apollo Aero. And they had one product before, which I can't figure out if they revealed at that show or not. I'm going to have to look into it a little more because it's brand new to us. In fact, I just found out about the Aero today. That's how new it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just a few days before we record.
So which do you want to talk about first? The other product or the Aero first? Because they have this new company has two new products. And that's pretty exciting.
Let's talk about the other one first.
The other one first and not the Aero. So we'll talk about one that's called the Apollo N. Yeah. And this one's kind of a toned down version of the one that we're going to talk to you about in just a moment, but it has a 4.2 liter V8. Again, I think it's sourced from Audi. It's a twin turbo, 7-speed sequential gearbox, 789 horsepower in this one, Ben. Now that is equivalent to what was in the race version of the Apollo from the previous company, the Gumpert company. So again, you can't say Gumpert with this one. It's just Apollo N.
Right. You know, I think, listeners, correct me if I'm off on this, but I think they both premiered. I think that the Apollo N also premiered at the Geneva Motor Show.
I'm sure you're right. I mean, literally 2 hours ago, I found out that Apollo is still making cars. So I've been trying to piece this together. So and I'm excited about it.
Yeah, it's a 7-speed sequential transmission, rear-wheel drive, of course, 649 pound-feet of torque. They claim, they being Apollo, claim that the N can hit 0 to 62 in 3.0 seconds.
Yeah, 3 seconds 0 to 60, which is still lightning fast. It's really quick, considering that it probably has gained some weight along the way. You know, just safety issues, but it's still made out of, you know, tube frame. It's still made out of lots of carbon fiber. I think it's a carbon fiber aluminum sandwich body or something like that. Some unusual building materials that are going to it are exotic building materials.
Yeah, it weighs like 2,645 pounds.
That's heavier than the previous version.
Right. Yeah, and it's weird because, you know, if you look at those specs, they're still pretty similar.
Yeah. And as we said, this is a slightly toned down version of the car that we're just about to talk to you about.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But this one to me, Ben, out of the two that we're going to mention today, the new products, the Apollo N looks closer, a lot more similar to the Gumpert Apollo.
It does.
In shape, than in spirit, I guess, than does the Aero that we're going to mention now. So let's talk about the Apollo Aero now.
Ah, yes, the Apollo Aero. So one of my favorite stories about this, came with this title. Autoblog had a great title for this. Apollo Aero rises from the Gumpert ashes with 1,000 horsepower.
Wow, I like it.
Yeah.
1,000 horsepower. So that's amazing right there. But I think what I saw was that they said that, like, if you want to think about it this way, it's like the genetic code of the Gumpert Apollo is still in this car.
Yeah.
Like the basis of it. It's just that they've completely reworked it for, you know, so they could be like the supreme hypercar now. You know, that's the idea, is that it's going to be this, this world competitive vehicle.
I want to hear your opinion, Scott. What do you think of the front?
Well,
the body change?
I'll tell you what I think. I think I kind of like it. I mean, I'm not entirely on board with it. This has more of a look to me of a McLaren than it does of the Gumpert style.
Yeah, good
but
call.
it's just getting used to it. Like I said, the Apollo N looks a lot more like the Gumpert did. The Aero to me looks a lot more like a McLaren. That's my idea. What do you think of the front end of it? You don't like it, apparently?
You know, I'm still on the fence because it might just be me enjoying the original design so much. So clearly this is calculated for the aerodynamic benefits,
sure.
Right? So this thing has a nose almost the way a plane would.
It's a lot like a beak.
Yeah, it's like a beak, and it tapers off. It's rounded, so it's not completely pointed, but it tapers off and goes forward further and protrudes farther than the original Apollo. It looks
it's not quite a snub nose.
The
original
and
Apollo.
And I'm thinking I think I preferred the snub nose, but altogether there is a smoothness to the design. There are more curves to it. And the first thing I thought when I looked at this was that it looked as though it was a car in an anime film.
Oh, yeah. You know what? That's not a bad thing to say. I think I agree with you on that. And
which means
honestly,
it looks great.
You know what? I also have to say that I think I'm a bigger fan of the Apollo N style versus the Apollo Aero style. But here's what I do like about this one. This is an incredible vehicle. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't turn one away, I don't think.
You wouldn't turn
no,
it down.
I wouldn't slap the keys out of your hand if you were to hand them to me, you know. So this one has a 4-liter V8 twin turbo engine. As you said, 1,000 horsepower, 737 foot-pounds of torque. Again, 7-speed sequential transmission, so that means it's a paddle shift probably.
Yeah.
Likely anyways. Safety cell, you know, carbon fiber, aluminum, that stuff, you know, that we mentioned before with the N. And an adjustable ride height, which I guess you would kind of expect in a supercar like this, you know, like an air suspension that allows it to go up or down, and an air jack system, which I really like. I like the idea of having an air jack system in a car.
Now, here's here's something interesting about the body that I feel like we should mention, and we'll get back to some of the other stuff here as well. It was supposedly inspired by sharks and the F-22 Raptor.
I can see that. I can see the influence of both of those in that.
I can definitely see the Raptor influence. Mm-hmm. The shark thing is aesthetic. I get it.
Yeah.
How much of that is marketing?
Well, they've been doing that for 60 years or something. Yeah. Maybe even longer, probably.
But it looks fantastic. I want to be clear with you about that, ladies and gentlemen. All right.
You know what? Maybe what? The biggest news of all. Can I unload
yeah,
with this
it,
one?
It,
because
yeah.
I'm excited about this maybe the most. Now, it's street legal. So it's not just a race car.
Mm-hmm.
However, this particular version, the Apollo Arrow, meets all FIA standards so that if a team wanted to race in a certain series, they could then say, yeah, let's build 200 of these for street use.
Yeah.
And then we're going to make our own race version.
Which is great.
And they can compete in any FIA series. So that's really, really cool. I think that's nice. Now, the N isn't that way. I don't think that's able to be. And you know, in other series, sure, yeah, but not FIA standards.
Right. And while we're on production, I want to point out that this car is going to be a production car, but it is not in production as of the time of this recording. The good news is when it does go into production, they'll be building this in Germany. They're probably going to build 100. They said 100 is going to be their max, but that's still a heck of a lot more than 30.
Yeah. And you know what? If somebody grabs onto this and says, yeah, we want to race it in whatever series they happen to want. Whatever that standard is, if it goes up to 200, mm-hmm. then they've got to build 200. So, you know, they'll pay for that to be done, or, you know,
sure.
You know, I don't know how this works exactly, but I would guess they would promise that, you know, the other 200 would sell, which, how can you do that? You know, I'd be willing to bet though that there's enough people out there that would put money down on this and say, yeah, I'd take one if you're going to build 200.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they would probably sell out within a year. That's just the way I feel. It seems like,
yeah.
Even though we're talking at an extreme level here, you know, these hypercars, supercars, it seems like whenever they release something that's a special edition, something that's unique in some way, no matter what the cost, even if it's a $1 million car, and I don't know what the pricing will be or anything, but it seems like somebody always has, you know, $400,000 to put down on one of these as like a down payment.
There's always someone.
Yeah, there's someone. There's always at least 500 people that want to do that.
Why is it never us?
Yeah, and get this, they've slightly improved their 0-62 time in this vehicle,
mm-hmm.
2.9 seconds, which is, I think, right along the lines of where McLaren is today. I think it's right at 2.9. This is not bad at all, Ben. 0-124 miles per hour, that's 200 kilometers per hour,
mm-hmm.
just 8.8 seconds. Can you imagine that? That's incredible. That's super. I mean, I'm having a hard time imagining what that would feel like on your body accelerating to 124 in 8.8 seconds.
I feel like it's probably like getting hit by a wall of air.
Yeah, it probably is. It's probably like some of these extreme roller coasters that they have now. Like, I mean, I know you don't quite get that fast, but pretty close. You get the same sensation anyways. Like, what's that one in Sear Point? Is it Top Fuel Dragster or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
I bet that feeling is like that when you launch up that hill.
Oh, I imagine so.
Yeah.
There's one other thing I wanted to bring to everyone's attention, and I know I'm jumping around, but I want to do it before I forget. In 2012-ish or so, leading up to the bankruptcy, there were two other vehicles that Apollo was supposed to build.
Really?
Yeah.
This is news to me.
The Explosion Coupe and the Tornate. And I have like the pictures of this. And I wanted to ask whether, like, in your opinion, how much or how little these previous designs ended up being in the current iteration. So here is,
And listeners can look at this online,
yeah.
I suppose. It's just as easy as we can find it here.
Yeah, they were teaming up with – they weren't completely different cars. So Apollo teamed up with Touring Superleggera to create this Tornate, and it's like a GT version of the Apollo. It was supposed to go on sale 2012.
Hmm.
And then the Explosion Coupe, which
not bad, but you know what? It looks more to me like a Nissan GTR.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't look like it takes some of the, almost Audi Quattro. It doesn't seem like it takes many of the cues from the other Apollos. So I wonder if we're going to see more of that stuff or if it's just going to be a done deal because of the bankruptcy, and now they've moved to the N and the...
What was the name of the one I just saw there? Because it sure looks like a car that you'd see more on the street around here, instead of the exotic supercar look.
Right. That was the Explosion Coupe.
The Explosion Coupe. So so look for that one. The other one was the Tornate, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Tornate.
Yeah.
So take a look at those online, listeners, and tell us what you think about those two, because they're brand new to me. I didn't even know that they were going to build those. This is my first look at them.
I think the language they use is... at least for the Explosion, was a production intent.
Oh, I see. So maybe, you know what? Sometimes that happens. Sometimes cars are left on the drawing board when companies go under.
Yeah.
Well, that's too bad that happened to those vehicles, but maybe it's best that they moved on, because what they've brought back to the market as of this week, is more along the lines of what we saw with the Gumpert Apollo. And I think that seems to fit the company better. It just seems like that's their brand. They should stick with it, right?
Yeah, I think it is their brand. I think you're correct. And I really want this stuff to succeed. I want to see one of these at a car show.
Well,
it would be great to see it on the road, but I don't know if we will, because how would you buy this car and drive it on streets like Atlanta?
Well, it's true, I guess. I mean, but if it has an adjustable ride height with that air suspension, it's possible.
It's
possible.
Is it advisable?
But you know what? I mean, honestly, our streets are in far better condition than when you head north and get into areas where they use a lot of salt on the roads in the wintertime.
Yeah.
With potholes and stuff like that. We do have we have speed bump hazards. That are far worse than other places because have we ever talked about this? Maybe we have. Down here in parking lots, you'll find speed bumps all over the place, and you'll find them in neighborhood, like in residential streets, you'll find speed bumps as you go through.
There might be one in your house that just got built while you were at work.
It seems like it. They're everywhere. And, I was thinking when I first moved here how unusual that was, and then I realized that they didn't have to worry about snowplows. And up north, if you hit a speed bump with a snowplow, that causes serious damage. I mean, you could bend the frame of the thing, so there's just not quite as many speed bumps up there. And that's got to be the reason. That's my best guess anyways. In parking lots, they also don't have there are a few, but not a lot, where they have, those concrete barriers, like a stop, so you don't roll past, in the middle of the parking lot. More wide open up there versus here, where they have a lot of those concrete barriers. And I think that has to be it. So that, if it was obscured by snow, the snowplow drivers would just plow right over them, causing damage to, the parking lot and also to their own vehicle.
That's going to be our new party line. When people ask me, Ben, why don't you have a supercar or a hypercar? I'm not going to say because it costs too much money. Now I'm going to say, well, the roads are kind of not built for them here. And I just don't think it's a good decision, which is going to be not the entire truth, but not a lie.
That's a tough sell.
That's a tough sell. No one's going to believe it.
That's right. Yeah. You're like, why aren't you you're not driving your LaFerrari because of speed bumps?
Yeah, and potholes.
No, yeah.
Actually, we may have talked about this on the show before, but I'm not sure how common this is in other cities. Atlanta has the city of Atlanta, at least, has a strange love of putting down metal plates.
I knew you were going to say the metal plates, because they are a hazard. I'll tell you, they use it to cover up. They can leave open pits on the road then.
Right. And then if a weighty car hits that plate the wrong way and moves it, like let's say a tractor trailer or something, then all of a sudden you have a very dangerous situation, because these holes are not like pothole dips that are a few inches. These things could be over 6 inches,
Well, they're deep enough. Sometimes they're deep enough for people to crawl into and work on, some of the infrastructure that's
right, like electric lines, water, utilities.
Exactly. And you're right. If they get shifted around a little bit. Now it sounds like a terrible plan to do something like that, but it works, because those plates are, what are they, like 3/4 inch thick, maybe?
Yeah.
They're very thick, and you hit
very
that.
Very heavy.
And the problem is you hit that 3/4 inch, edge.
That lip, yeah.
As you're driving in traffic, in the city or wherever. And, that's a bone shaker. It really is. I mean, it'll rattle fillings loose out of your teeth. It's really, really rough.
It's crazy.
Sometimes they go to the extra effort of adding some asphalt to the very edge of it to make like a little ramp up to it.
Yeah, which I think is considerate.
And it sort of holds it in place too, but it's not very often that that happens.
Well, let us know what you think, ladies and gentlemen. Let us know about the roads in your neck of the woods, your part of the globe, because I'm especially interested to learn about who has the best or worst roads, because we have people write in and tell us about terrible roads. But, you know, I guess if you don't have anything to complain about, you're not going to rave about how good the roads are.
Yeah, like if you're out in the country and you've got to travel on those, you know, like those dirt roads that end up being kind of washboarded after a while.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man, those are maddening because either you go fast and skip right over it and destroy your suspension.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, it's gravel roads. So that's not a great idea. But or you go slow and you just take the punishment. You know?
Right. And also let us know what you think about the new Apollo.
Oh, yeah, the brand new one, the N and the Arrow.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, we'd love to hear what you think about the, I guess we'll call it the historic
Apollos,
right? The Gumpert Apollo, which is, it's funny to say historic, but the previous version, I suppose. Mm-hmm. You know, tell us what you think about the N versus the Arrow. Which one do you like better? I'd like to know that, too.
And do you think that this will be a game changer for racing?
Another thing, one more thing.
What's that?
I'd like to know what they think about the two models that were never built.
Ah, yes. Let's didn't enter production at least.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I do think the explosion was shown at a Geneva show.
Okay.
And I may be incorrect on that, but yes, let us know. And as always, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter if you want to check. We're CarStuffHSW on that. If you want to check out our earlier podcast on the Nürburgring, please do so. You can find it on our website, carstuffshow.com. And if you want to take a page from Aaron S.'s book and write to us with a suggestion for an upcoming episode or topic you would like to hear more about, we're all ears. Not literally, it's a figure of speech. What I'm saying is, you can write to us directly without any of that social media rigmarole or brouhaha-ing. We are
CarStuff at HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.